What's up? It's your boys, Jordan and Abraham. As always, I'm an MD PhD student, so I'm your smart friend. Tonight, I didn't want to say Jordan is your fast friend like usual, but this week he just might be your ignorant friend. He's not really. You know, it's fun because you kind of have overlapping roles in my. You're my fast friend, but you're also my ignorant friend, Jordan. Tonight, I'm going to introduce you as my ignorant, not my fast friend. That's
You
the title
really
of the
wanted to waste no time disrespecting me in this show, huh?
We got your ignorant friend who happens to be fast and your smart friend who happens to be slow. But most importantly, we got your
He
friend
might
who
be
we want
slower in the
this.
brain. He might be slower in the brain than he thinks. That's all I'm saying, but we might get to that later.
Man, this chapter was both great and mid at the same time for me, because it felt like we're building up to something, but it was honestly just like too much of a tease. And that I don't know how much I love that, but I wanna really just hear what happened this week. I can't even remember. There was so much going on. Can you give me a rundown of all the
There was
crazy
so
stuff?
much, man, and this has been one of the crazier rundowns for me to actually write because as I'm writing it, I'm looking at Vegapunk's speech. That's crazy. Everything that's actually happening with the reactions, I actually want to talk about. And so that's crazy. And so I was writing this like, I don't even know how I'm going to get this done. But we have to start somewhere. The chapter begins with reactions around the world to Vegapunk's news. We see Sakazuki watching stolidly, Mocktown in uproar, the shipwrights of Water 7 in disbelief, Shirahoshi and Neptune saying it sounds outlandish, the Marines calling it madness, and Doflamingo talking to Magellan and Impel Down saying, "What are you going to do if the prison gets completely flooded? We could always go somewhere high up."
So you might accuse me of reading more into this than I should be, but the fact that Doflamingo is saying this, and I feel like high up is the part that's emphasized in the sentence, suggests that the world government is going to be responsible for this flooding, right? That because who lives high up? Well, you know, the Celestial Dragons do. So if this were a natural, you know, cause, if this flooding was related to some natural
This, how are
event in
you
the
gonna take
world,
this? This, how are you gonna take this?
no,
Okay.
I was just like, man, it just seems like we had this whole back and forth about, like, you know, is there going to be a triggering event? Is this going to be related to like the nature of the world and geology? I heard more about geology last week than I've heard in like the last 10 years of my life. And Doflamingo's speech made me think, hey, this is probably going to be more of a triggering event kind of thing that the world government does. And that's why they're emphasizing up high. What about you? What do you think?
Well, I wouldn't say that I think reading into this is too much because, again, one of the reasons that I put this on, this is also one of the first points that I want to talk about in my review. It's really interesting when we're talking about, if you remember back in Marineford, when Doflamingo kills Moria, Moria's like, "Who sent you after me? Was it the, was it the whoever?" And he says, "No, someone even higher up." So for me, especially understanding that what we're dealing with is something with the sea rising, especially as we start thinking about what the One Piece, like how the One Piece world has been constructed, and what is the, I mean, you could call it geology, whatever, but what is the sort of like geological history of the world, right? Like, how has the One Piece world become the world that it is? And why is it then that there's a group of people who used to live up above the red line? Why is it that there's a group of people who live in like a giant, series of castles and fancy buildings in the sky? I think that really understanding this as a double entendre, not just that Doflamingo means that we're talking about people who are high up in their rank, but also talking about what people being physically high up in the sky. And beyond that, needing to think about why I think it's clear as we understand, we see the sea levels rising and things like that. It's clear that being high up is going to be of some kind of greater significance than just, hey, they're in the sky because they're world nobles. And I'm really curious about what that is going to hold.
For sure. And I mean, the most obvious thing is if there's flooding, you want to get to higher land, right? Like that's like the surface level interpretation of it. But I agree with exactly what you're saying there. What he very clearly is making reference to some people. I think it's the people who currently live up there, the celestial dragons. Maybe it is related to like some of these races, like the Lunarians that used to live up there, or some ancient lore. I don't know. I guess we'll find out.
It does seem that he's. Yeah, it does seem that he could be just someone who happens to have already known this entire time that someone like Im is living up in the sky and being the king of the world. But it's interesting to imagine. Clearly, it seems like he knows something he's not supposed to. That's why they can't kill him, whatever. And so I'm really intrigued as to figure out what it is that Doflamingo might be referencing. Is it something that to this point the readers are privy to, which I think is possible, or is it something even beyond our imaginations and what we've been led to actually see? I think it's a good question. At the very least, having him make that use that term again is really interesting. Gives us a lot to think about. But jumping back to Egghead, we then see the Elder Stars and York frantically working to eliminate the Denden Mushi and end the broadcast as Vegapunk continues. Please humor me for a moment as I make a prediction. An exceptionally vicious earthquake will rock the entire planet. Assuming my sensor data is accurate, a few days from now, as I record this, an exceptionally... I just read the... You know, I wrote the same sentence twice. An exceptionally will wreck the planet. Following this calamity, sea levels the world over will rise by 1 meter. A number of islands will become uninhabitable. And naturally, many beaches will also be completely submerged. If this doesn't come to pass, feel free to disregard the rest of this message. We see Tanta, my guy from Long Ring Longland. I want to shout him out. And Aokiji
he was great.
Listening. Yeah, he was. Oh, he's my favorite. He could give him that rotten cheese, man. we see him and Aokiji listening quietly for Vegapunk's next words. Assuming, however, that these events have transpired, then please heed what I have to say. The earthquake I just predicted cannot strictly be considered a natural phenomenon. Abraham, you seem to have a lot to say about this. You seem to even want to get into this early in the first part. So
much to say, because this is exactly what I was trying to like. This is the point I was trying to make over and over again, either last week or 2 weeks ago, where I even point out Water 7 as an example. I was like, Water 7 is the example of a flooding island that's actively occurring. I was like, if this is a problem that Water 7 is dealing with, that then it would make sense, right? I wrote down exactly what I said. I said, it sounds like there's going to be a triggering event causing this flooding. If this was related to the nature of the world, it would feel more like what's going on in Water 7 than what we have described to us in this chapter. I think I said this about two chapters ago. And that's, I feel like, was essentially what we got right now, right? Iceberg comes out, or maybe it was, I don't know, was it Iceberg or was it Polly? One of them comes out and was like, yeah, you know, it would. I would get it if it was like just our island that was going to get flooded, but rest of the world, that's crazy, right? Which was my point when we were talking about it. I was like, this can't be related to the nature of the world, like the flooding that is to come in the future, because these islands are not being actively flooded right now. Water 7 is the standout with respect to that. And I feel like this was Oda essentially elaborating the exact same thing.
Well, I want to point out that in, I think it was the S class and F class last week, even I made up my own theory, which is that the sea rising is a result of drilling to the bottom of Enies Lobby. Now, I was suggesting that maybe the infinite energy source is somewhere at the core of the world. It seems clear that we've in this in the point in between seeing the mother flame. But at the very least, right, like I have been open to the possibility that the thing causing the rising seas is something having to do with like the drilling, right? That was a theory that I brought up. To be fair, I also am always open to the possibility that there's something about the world that's just like, it's happening and the world is rising. And that's just like a natural phenomenon that we're experiencing. It seems at this point clear that that is not true.
Hey, there you go. So you were incorrect about that, probably.
You know, we can get back onto you being incorrect about certain other things. But what I want to point out about talking about the nature of what I want to point about talking about the nature of the world, right, is when you're talking about a fictional series, when we're like, when I say something about the nature of the world, right, because I've said, for example, well, what we learn about the nature of the world might mean, might give us an explanation, for example, for why Luffy's Nika power can power the giant robot. Like, that seems like something we don't understand. Where do powers yeah. come from? Like, what's the source of devil fruits, right? It's not like I'm literally talking about, like, what are trees is in terms yeah. of the nature. But yeah, what yeah, I'm yeah. saying is there are things in the One Piece world that we have taken for granted as this is how yeah. the world is, right? We've taken yeah. for granted through 1,100 chapters that the yeah. world is just a series of islands and that's just how it is. And we just have a big old pirate adventure, yeah. which is why having some kind of explanation for actually the world isn't just this thing, but we're getting, but, mm-hmm. But there's something behind it.
Yeah.
Is part of what I'm talking about when I say it's the nature yeah. of the world. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a natural phenomenon, but it explains the nature of what we're looking at and explains something that we've been taking for granted as if yeah. it's just how the world is.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to get to the ancient kingdom stuff at the end of the chapter eventually. But I think what you were talking about there could be related to what Vegapunk is going to eventually reveal about the Void Century and the ancient kingdom stuff, right? Like, it could be like the ancient kingdom was.
Wow,
like,
that's amazing. You said that's related to that. Possibility could be. That's interesting. That's crazy how you said that.
But, I mean, I don't think it will be, right? I think what will end up happening, like I've been telling you. Okay, I don't want to jump the gun because we're going to get into that whole discussion. I want to stick on what we're talking about right now, right?
This
whole stuff with the flooding, though, specifically, right?
Yes.
That is where I disagree that this flooding is related to anything about the nature. Like, the fact that flooding will happen, unless you're going to include the nature of the world to include stuff like the existence of like ancient weapons and whatnot, and just like world building in general, if that's also included under your umbrella of like the nature of the world.
Let me, because I thought about it to try and give a clear definition for exactly what I mean, yeah. right? Because if yeah. I say because when I first was talking about the nature of the world, it didn't seem to you like I was going to be talking about something like why the world is a series of islands, which was actually something that I presented as, and you know, I think we've gotten a decent explanation for that actually.
Yeah.
And that didn't seem like something that to you would have been included within that. It's things that we take for granted about the world that seem interesting, yeah. right?
Yeah.
That are different from maybe our world. That mm-hmm. actually have some kind of hidden explanation that's really significant to the story. So for example, like Enies Lobby is a giant hole in the ground. Getting an explanation for why that is there, like we just right now to this point, we've kind of just treated that as nature. Like, oh, it's nature. There's a hole in the ground in this place. No real explanation for this. Oh, why are there all these whirlpools between the Gates of Justice? I don't know. Like, that's just how the One Piece world is. And getting some kind of explanation for things like that would be within that. Things like, hey, here's what the ancient weapon is. Unless it's like specifically fits that kind of parameter, like that's not explaining something about something that we have previously understood in a certain way.
I do think we have to get reveals about that at some point, right? Like Oda does have to flesh out his world that he's created to his readers.
If Vegapunk comes in and says that my reveal is that this is what the last ancient weapon is, that does not qualify within what I'm suggesting.
But what the reason why I don't think we're getting this now, but I do think we will get that later in the future, is something that I brought up to you before, is that I don't think this matters to the random citizens around the world, right? Why does Tonta care about, like, you know, he doesn't even probably know about it, like why there's a hole under Enies Lobby, or why, you know, how devil fruits work. Like we said, there's a bunch of people in like the random Blue Seas who don't even know that devil fruits exist. They think that devil fruits are a myth, right? So it doesn't feel like this moment where Oda is announcing something to the world is the place for him to make that announcement. That feels like something, let's say we have six extra Vegapunks, right? We have, because of all of the satellites and whatever. If right. one of them happen, if one of them, if all of them, all but one of them, let's say, die on Egghead and one continues with the Straw Hats, or maybe like you were suggesting last week, one of like Frankie or someone like that carries on their will or whatever, right? Or like learn something, like maybe get something from Punk Records, whatever, right? I think at that point is when we will get that. Like if we get a Vega, like let's say Shaka join the crew or sail with the crew out of Egghead, and then, you know, he's like, by the way, this is how Devil Fruits work. By the way, this is like whatever, right? And we get answers to those questions, but the random citizens of the world, like I just don't understand why that would be relevant to those people.
In the same, what I would suggest is that the answer that we get to some of these things will allow us as readers to make a lot of connections. For example, as we learn about Joy Boy and Nika and the relation between those two being in a technologically advanced society, there's no real reason that anyone in the world would care about there being a technologically advanced society. But I think we're gonna start to be able to start making connections between things as we learn about that. But, you know, I think this is a good time to transition to like the next segment of the chapter, because I think we're kind of getting into some of the discussion that'll come from that. As Vegapunk continues after talking about the earthquake not being a natural phenomenon, he says, I've always naively yearned for peace and prosperity, and that brought me to what proved to be my first grave sin. I was fixated on my dream of developing an everlasting energy source, hell-bent on driving the world to a bigger and brighter future, but I flew too close to the sun. And as we see that, we see Saturn arriving at the mother flame, a flame within a giant tank of water, abled A and Mu.
Labeled A and Mu? Wait, I don't remember that.
Yeah, on the tank. Yeah, you pull it up. Pull up the frame with it on the tank.
I see. Yeah, A and Mu.
Yeah, it says and Mu.
Dang.
Now, as I'm sure, yeah.
Emu.
Yeah. I don't know if it's too close to Emu, but what I would say is Mu does mean, I'm sure you've seen this in some videos, because just that I was talking, Mu means nothingness, right? And there's a lot of things talking about what comes from Mu. And all, A, if A stood for all, it could mean all and nothing. And I think there's an interesting.
Yeah.
I don't really understand exactly what, you know, I you're talking about bringing forth all from nothing. I don't know. Mm. It's an interesting piece.
Yeah. So this, I feel like, is going to bring me up to... So last week, I tried to, you know, say what I thought Vegapunk's sins were going to be. And I feel like, you could tell me if I'm wrong, I feel like I got one right and one wrong. The one that I got completely wrong was saying that, you know, Kuma's backstory and, like, taking his agency was going to be one of his sins. That was dead wrong.
Right.
But I also did say that if the imminent flooding that is going to happen is because Vegapunk gave the world government access to something like the Mother Flame, then I could see this being one of his grave sins. And that kind of feels like what he's saying right now. He's like, I had this ambition to, like, you know, work for and create this like infinite energy source for the greater good of the world, but my ambition might end up destroying the world, essentially, right? That's what I think he's basically saying right here.
I think that's one way to interpret it that I think is interesting. I think there's another layer there for me where it's not just necessarily, because once again, right, there's a sense of, in the last chapter, he said, I don't really understand him, probably Emu, we don't know, it could be anyone else, enough to necessarily make a clear, to really talk about right and wrong. So in that way, it feels sort of to me like he's not talking about this thing must be evil, this like what I did was created and then eventually used for someone, used by someone evil. I do kind of, I think I brought up last time, I like the idea of him feeling like it ended up being that it was taken away from, like, you know, he wanted to, I think I taught, you know, like part of what I saw is inheriting the will of O'Hara, which obviously, you know, we're going to talk a little bit more about later, but part of what I saw is it being something where he wants to make something accessible to everyone that is currently not accessible to everyone, which in a lot of ways it would be like what you're talking about with giving the giving the world government access to the mother flame. But what I start to wonder from seeing his words here, when he says, you know, I was fixated on my dream and I flew too close to the sun. Like, I start to wonder, was there some kind of unexpected, unintended consequence to Vegapunk creating the mother flame? Is there some kind of byproduct that has resulted in something bad in our world, something that we know that is bad, that is not just done because of the world government, but just because of doing this thing, something bad happened that has affected the world?
I feel like that is the use of the mother flame for weapons, right? Like, I think his intention was to develop this energy source for the world to, you know, fix a lot of the problems that people deal with. And maybe he naively thought that that's all it would be used for. And it feels weird that someone as smart as Vegapunk wouldn't realize that the world government would use something like this to oppress people, right? But maybe he's like one of those classic characters that's like high int, low wisdom kind of thing. But like, you know,
right. I only learned that Riz meant charisma
wisdom.
No, I know. But I just wanted to say that because it's within the whole. It's within the whole. Like, someone said charisma, and I was like, wait, is that where Riz comes from?
That's crazy, man. You gotta. Yeah. You're such a boomer,
bro. I am a boomer. I really am. I'm not on the internet at all. But you know, respond to what you're like. Like, I think that. Like, the thing that makes me think he's not just saying that is the fact that he doesn't want to discuss right and wrong in terms of his understanding of him, whomever that is. You think it's probably fair to assume that's him, right, at this point?
Yeah, I think so.
Like, I think so. Yeah, that seems unlikely he's talking about someone else. You know, to me, he would understand that from the beginning. But, you know, it's sort of like in Full Metal Alchemist, right? You know, you say, I mean, shoot, Ed tells the story about Icarus to Rose in probably the first volume of the series in Lior. And the whole point is, as scientists, when you get too close to the domain of God, as they would say in Full Metal Alchemist or whatever, then you end up having unintended consequences that are really evil. And you find out how terrible the Philosopher's Stone is, et cetera. Yeah, I want to think of something like right now that would be crazy, right? Yeah. Like, you know, it's a flame in a tank of water, right? Is there some reason that having created the mother flame is connected, for example, to why devil fruit users drown or lose their energy? Yeah, right.
Yeah,
you know, and what is the significance of that? Was creating the mother flame something that I don't really have
get what you're saying. I think it would be really cool to get something like that. I just think it's so unlikely, right? You could say this is just like the boring explanation, but it really does feel like I want to see reread exactly what he says, right? Because he specifically points out like that one of his sins is let me find it real quick.
So I was fixated on I always naively yearned for peace and prosperity, and that brought me to what proved to be my first grave sin. I was fixated on my dream of developing an everlasting energy source. Hellbent. Yeah. Okay, yeah, that's what you want. Cool. Yeah. Hellbent on driving the world to a bigger and brighter future.
Yeah, and then him saying that while in the background, you know, you have like the world government fighting. And the thing is, we also know that they need the mother flame, right? Like, the reason why they can't destroy Punk Records is because, or not Punk, right. like, but like the Labostratum is because they need the mother flame. The reason, I'm pretty sure they said straight up that they can't fire that weapon repeatedly is because they don't have enough of like the mother flame energy source or whatever, right? So it just feels the answer that's staring us in the face is that the world government needs this mother flame to power this whatever this weapon is, whether that's Uranus, whatever, or something else. But maybe it's not Uranus, but that is right in front of our face, and I can't really justify any other explanation. Even though I do think it would be cool to be like, oh, you know, maybe this,
like what if it has something to do with like Skypiea and things are floating, right? And then maybe with the mother flame, you know, it's gonna, things are gonna come crashing down onto the ground, like meteor, like I don't know, right? I don't, you know.
Yeah, I got you. It would be cool. I just, I don't think it's gonna happen. I think the explanation's right in front of us, and it's just a matter of being like, look, the you know, Occam's razor, right? The simplest explanation is the most likely explanation, kind of thing.
But it's not an S-class theory. The simplest explanation is not an S-class theory, and I'm in the business of coming up with S-class theories. But to then jump into, oh, I don't even know what I think. Yeah, to jump back into Vegapunk's work, he said, I shouldn't get ahead of myself, though. Maybe I should learn from that. As we continue on Vegapunk's speech, I shouldn't get ahead of myself, though, in order to understand where the world is heading, as we see shots of the giant robot wreaking havoc on the Marines and Dory and Bragi running from Workery. We must first address the past, specifically what happened between 900 and 800 years ago, a century-long period that most of us think of as a blank part of history. As we see the celestial dragons reacting to the news, Jaguar D. Saul laughing alone on an island, and Whoop Slap and Chow Chow, Vegapunk reveals that he the government and studied the forbidden era known as the Void Century by using the Poneglyphs after receiving several documents from the scholars of O'Hara. As the Straw Hats prepare to make their final escape, Vegapunk finishes, I only know a small fragment of this 100-year-long tale. It wouldn't be right to leave you with baseless speculation, so I'll limit myself to the facts as I know them. The star of this story was born 900 years ago in a bountiful and advanced kingdom, and just like the legendary sun god Nika from the fables of Elbaf, he too fought with a stretchy and elastic body. They called him Joy Boy. He was the first man to take to the seas, the first one to be called a pirate.
Yeah. I mean, I love this reveal. I want to shout out. I think the first person that I ever saw say this was like Joy Boy, who like years and years and years ago said something along the lines of the ancient kingdom was a kingdom of pirates or something like that.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
someone else put out a theory.
I think it was Joy Boy Theories who said that something like Joy Boy was the first pirate. I thought that was crazy. Nope. I was right.
It was right. It was. I mean, I liked that theory when he came out with it. For a bunch of different reasons, but like, you know, shout out to him because it paid off years and years later. No, it feels again to me that this is going to lead to we're going to learn a bit more about what the O'Haran scholars knew about what happened in the Void Century, right? We know that there was an ancient kingdom that then got eradicated, right? And maybe this is going to be related to like the betrayal of Joy Boy and why people like Zunisha and the giant robot are like apologizing. Maybe we're going to find out something about that. Maybe we're going to find out something about like how the 20 kings came together or something like that. Like just, but in my opinion, this is all going to be like a history lesson, but it's going to be a history lesson in the same way that when Sugar was defeated, that everyone on Dressrosa learned about what had really been happening on the island the whole time, right? Like they all lived in this world where there was one truth, right? Because Sugar existed, there was this truth that existed, right? And once you
and then you learned about something about the nature of the world, the nature of that society.
Then
you might say you learned something about the nature of society.
I don't know. What are we talking about? Society.
I don't know how you. Like we're talking about people, right? You know, but like you learn something. They learned something about the way this world had been created is not what we had thought. But continue.
No. I'm not letting you get away with that. Because when you talk about the way the world has been created, all of this stuff that you had been talking about for the past couple of weeks was stuff like, you know, look at the sea levels, how the sea levels have risen or look at like these powers. And I do think like I'm on board with the idea that sea levels have risen in the past. And that's why we have a series of islands. And maybe that's a part of the reveal that we get, right? Possibly. But
sure.
I think that when I'm talking about what I think this reveal is going to be about. I think this is going to be that moment where Sugar is defeated, where the false, like all the false narratives, all of the propaganda that has been spread by the world government all of these years is shattered by Vegapunk, because he's going to out like the research that the government has deemed as taboo, right? Mm-hmm. And so that doesn't seem like, I wouldn't consider that to be something related to the nature of the world. It could, don't,
no, I will say these, bro, could over, I was just joking with, yeah, the Sugar moment, as in like, if you were someone who was like, you know, growing up in the dress rose, the toy society, and you just think, yeah, oh, I live in a society with toys, that's cool. Then you learn something about the nature of where those toys, like, I'm making a joke, but you see what I mean there, right? Like
yeah,
for us, it wouldn't have really been a reveal in that way, but for the people there, it would have revealed something about the nature of the society that they were actually living in.
Yeah. But that's what I think we're building to right now, where the whole world is just going to be like, holy shit. This world government is, they're a bunch of criminals, or maybe not criminals is not the right word, but they've been doing all this crazy shit, all of these genocides, blah blah blah. You know, maybe they don't learn about like emu existing and whatnot, but like I think at the end of the day, the faith that the people have in the world government is going to be shaken after this incident, because they're going to learn more about the true nature of the world government, just
the
like
true nature of the world government, not the true nature of the world government. Okay.
You know, like human nature.
So nature is kind of a broad term. It's kind of, you know, you can use it in different ways.
But
yeah.
I feel like we're,
and nature's kind like of a broad term.
We're using it differently, though. You know, we're clearly using it differently. It's just like the people on Dressrosa thought Doflamingo was a great king and a benevolent king, and then Sugar went down, and they're like, holy shit, this guy's a dictator. Right.
Right. Yeah. I just want you to acknowledge that nature is a word that can be used broadly in the way that you just used it.
Of course it can. I never said it. When did I ever say it?
It feels like you're asking for a very narrow definition for me.
No.
I think it's clear that whatever comes out of it, like for whatever reason, right? Like obviously the world government has not wanted people researching the Pwn glyphs this entire time. They've been trying to have people out of it. I don't know. You know, I certainly would find it to be a more compelling moment if it isn't that Vegapunk goes up and just reveals, hey, this is what the world government is doing, they're evil, but reveals something. Now, maybe it might inspire people to question the world government, but I think it'd be more interesting to me to see Vegapunk talk about the whatever the phenomenon he's talking about is, whatever it is that the world government is trying to hide, and for there to be some level of like moral complexity about what they're doing, you know, for there to be some amount of like, of he doesn't know exactly what he's of M is trying to potentially save the world from something, but doing it through really questionable means, but sort of giving people and the readers the tools to kind of reevaluate where we are. Yeah. I do think there's still a chance that we end up with some kind of explanation for, you know, when we start talking about Nika, the sun god, Joy Boy, we look at the Mother Flame, in the same time looking at the Mother Flame, and talking about an advanced society, I do think there's some amount of potential for having some kind of explanation for, like, whether it's, like, Luffy's power and where that one specifically comes from could potentially be dealt with, like, it could be something for about, like, but I think there's potential for this to be more, which is going to be interesting to see.
I got a question for you, because I do think, from going back all the way to Sabaody, where Rayleigh is like, you know, the conclusion you guys get to might be different from ours, or in God Valley, where you have Roger fighting alongside the celestial dragons rather than fighting with rocks, to now, right, where it doesn't seem like there may not be a straightforward solution,
right?
But to me, the reveal of the Gorosei and their forms, they're like the forms that they transform into, they're just, the only word I can use to describe it is just evil. Like, you look at Saturn,
pretty evil.
You look at Saturn and you're like, he's evil. right? And it feels like Oda is taking, he's not trying to paint these people as like morally ambiguous people, like by giving them forms like that. So I see stuff like that, and that has pushed me more towards the world government is like, there is no going to be like gray. It's going to be a very clear, like, this is, you know, these are the oppressors, these are whatever, right? Because they just, it looks like Oda is just depicting them as like the embodiment of evil.
That said, I do think that what we've seen with Oda, what he's tended to do is give his villains some kind of, except for maybe like Crocodile, right? Or like Don Krieg or some jank like that. He's mm-hmm. given them some amount of, here's a reason why they are the way they are. So for example, someone like Arlong, you kind of just threw the earth for like 600 chapters. You just think Arlong was a bad dude. And yeah. then you go to Fishman Island, Abraham's number one top favorite arc of One Piece.
Let me tell you something, Jordan. If you keep on disrespecting Fishman Island, I'm going to have to take your black card like Kendrick took Drake's. And keep on disrespecting Fishman Island. Watch it. Watch yourself.
Bro, you African, bro. Get out of here, man. You African.
Wakanda forever.
But the... Bro, I even got lost in what I was saying. I got so distracted by... Oh, yeah.
You were talking about Arlong.
Bad guys. Yeah, complex to the bad guys. You know, Big Mom, for example, you have this kid who just like wants friends and has created this world where everyone's her friend, and she's actually just... And it's actually very oppressive. You have someone like Kaido, who it turns out was like a really young, hopeful guy, and just over time just grew less and less hopeful and became completely cynical about the world. None of them look as evil as what we've seen to this point from the Elder Stars. But yeah. I think that doesn't preclude them from having some level of complexity. It's just that the decision that they're making is something that I think Oda is going to say is wrong.
I have two people I want to bring up real quick, because you brought up a number of villains, but two people that you did not bring up that I actually think are the most relevant to this conversation are NL and Dofi, because I think both of them are both Skypiea and Dressrosa are microcosms for the story as a whole. NL is literally like a god, you know, like Skypiea. We don't need to get into all of it, but both of these arcs are microcosms of the story, right?
Right.
To me, those two are the villains that have the least moral ambiguity in the show, especially NL. NL is just a fucking psychopath, right? He just wants.
Yeah, NL is kind of a psycho. Yeah.
Yeah, and Dofi, I understand Dofi had like a tragic childhood, but even like as a kid, you see how like fucked up this guy is.
Yeah, right? He was always a bad dude. Yeah.
Yeah,
like he's out there getting like, you know, pinned up, and he's just like, "Father, kill them! I hate them! I'm gonna kill them all!" Yeah.
So, what do you think? Because I think those two villains are the people that we have to look to when we're thinking about Imu and the Gorosei, rather than all the other villains we've had in the story.
I think, to be fair, with Enel especially, there doesn't seem to be a lot of moral ambiguity. You could start to wonder exactly where he comes from and whatever's going on with, you know, winged people that we might not know about. But I think that's something that's very fair. It's with Doflamingo, I at the very least think there's a little bit more complexity. The thing that he's doing is bad. But I feel like we don't actually have a great understanding for Doflamingo. I think there's probably some amount of, he clearly like knows something about the world that we don't at this point. And I think there's probably some amount of him having become a cynic because of whatever his experience is, whatever this thing is that he knows. And so he's made whatever decisions that he's tried to make. He is someone who's like definitely still evil, and the thing that he's doing tends to like not be good. He also is someone who cares deeply about his family and cares deeply about the people who are close to him. And like, so, you know, there's always some kind of, even with the most evil characters, some kind of, I would say redeeming quality. But, you know, Abraham, you know, we focus a lot today on how wrong I have been about certain things. Okay. And I just want to, you know, I wouldn't say that we focused about it that much on it. You know, I think the jury's still out on some of my things. I think the C thing is we got an answer for something that I necessarily said. I think mentioning, you know, I had been predicting that we're going to learn something about a source of energy. And I think we're getting some more of that that might potentially lead to more in the series. So that's possible. But I at least want you to admit that
I also predicted that, by the way. I said I thought the Mother Flame was going to be an energy source.
No, not that. I mean predicting that part of Vegapunk's reveal is going to have to do about, like the energy source, like where energy comes from in the world, right?
Okay.
That's one of the things that has been there. Now, I would just really like you to, it would be very big of you to admit that you were wrong in suggesting that the reveal from Vegapunk was not going to be a reveal for the readers. Because I want to be really clear, because I did give you a lot of credit. That one did prompt me to get on my phone and do the crack dealer gap. I did that. And
you
I
did.
Think.
You did that repeatedly about a number of different things.
I have done that repeatedly about a number of different things. But I think that sometimes that my doing the crack dealer gag and the amount of ridicule that I rightly espoused to the idea that this reveal was not going to be a reveal in any way for the readers sometimes gets attributed to what I felt about, to how I felt about things like, to how I felt about things like studying the Pwn glyphs or studying or learning about the Void Sentry, etc. I think I said, when you talk about letting the world government up, I said, you're right that has to happen. And maybe that also happens.
Mm-hmm.
But for that to happen, why would Vegapunk be the one to give the reveal if that's all it is?
Let me break it down for you real quick. When you do that crack dealer joke, that applies to the whole idea. It doesn't apply to one subset of the idea. If I'm smoking crack about you know, you can't be like you're a crackhead here, but not with this same, you know, only for like half of your idea. So I'm holding you to this for the whole thing. My whole idea.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Abraham. Go ahead. Your whole idea was.
Because I do agree that when I said it was a reveal for the people of the world, not so much for the readers. I guess that is definitely not the case, right? Because we're going to learn about the Void Sentry, which is something that we don't know about. But I guess what the point I was trying to make when I said that, and I probably just didn't phrase it correctly, is that the reveal that we need to get is something that needs to be relevant more for the people of the series rather than the people who are reading the series, right? That it's like what I mentioned today, where I was just like, why does the rest of the world need to care about why there's a hole under Annie's lobby and all these other things? I probably didn't express myself correctly, and you know, so that part was incorrect. But what I meant to say was essentially that whatever is being revealed has to be important for the people that are actually living, like the common folk in the story.
Right. And you, as an example of that, you basically said that the world government's dirt, or like them realizing the world government evil, was an example of that. And that has to happen by the end of the story, right?
Yeah.
And in response to that, I said, you're right that that has to happen. And maybe that also happens.
Huh.
But Vegapunk wouldn't have to be the one to reveal that if that's all that's going to be in the reveal. So I want to be really clear here that I feel like I have been getting all this crap. I've been getting some, if you're listening, I've been getting some mean messages from Abraham in the Discord. I've been getting some mean messages from Abraham in the Discord. I have been.
Called me a crackhead. You called me a crackhead.
It was obviously going to be a prediction.
No,
it was obviously going to be a reveal for everyone. It was obviously going to be a reveal for everyone reading it. Well, it was in the end, wasn't it? It sure was. I was right about that. And I thought you were on crack for predicting otherwise. But in the end, you know, I think there's The jury's still a little bit out on most of these predictions, but I do think that there's clearly some possibility that everyone comes out of this realizing the world government is evil. I think that we're learning things about the One Piece world that have to do with the nature of the world. And I think there's possibility that whatever we learn, having learned about the nature of energy, having learned about the Mother Flame, we might end up having a greater understanding for some of the other things that we...
I want to say something real quick, too, because I was listening to some of the previous episodes, and one of the questions you had asked me was, like, why Vegapunk? Why is Vegapunk the person to reveal this? Why not someone like Vivi or Sabo or something?
Vivi, Sabo,
like that,
yeah, exactly, yeah. Same episode.
And I, no, I thought about it, and I was just like, honestly... Who else has the resources to be able to, like, actually reach out to the whole world, right? Like, I didn't, I don't think any of us thought that Vegapunk just had, like, was able to connect to Denden Mushi around, like, the globe, right, to deliver this message, right?
Bro, Dragon got his number, bro. Dragon got his phone number.
Dragon got his phone number. No. But Dragon hasn't done shit in the story so far.
Yeah, I'm still waiting
for Dragon to do something. But no, I think when I because I do think someone like Vivi is going to be important for getting people to trust in the Straw Hats. But in terms of just disseminating information to the world, I think the reason why it has to be Vegapunk is because no one else in the world has the ability to just, like, hack into whatever, all of these Denden Mushi and just, like, you know, broadcast to the world, right? Like, Vivi can't do that. I think the only person who might have been able to do something similar to this is Morgan's, because of, like, the whole, you know, newspaper press. Print stuff, all that stuff, the press stuff. But Morgan's is obviously not going to be the one to do that.
You might be right about that, but I also don't think that narratively we would have really batted an eye if Vegapunk would have said that, you know, saw the revolutionaries found some kind of technology, or Vegapunk gave them some kind of technology that can broadcast to the whole world, right? Like, we saw the broadcast, the Marines broadcast to the whole world, the execution of Ace. So I think we wouldn't have really batted an eye having seen that. I think my point was just that if the only reveal is stuff we've already seen, that's just the world government is evil and has done these things, and it's not going to give us more than that, then there's no reason for Vegapunk to do it. I think that what we've learned about the Mother Flame, what we might continue to learn about how advanced the ancient kingdom was, which is what he did mention in that, in his monologue, I think those are the things, in addition to things that might make us question the world government, that make it a reveal that is uniquely and necessarily Vegapunk as opposed to someone else. But we've had a heated discussion.
We have.
I think we've been being negative, you know, towards each other a little bit. You know, Abraham says some very rude things to me on the internet. I'm not gonna lie.
It's time to be positive. You called me a crackhead. You called me a crackhead repeatedly.
Bro, I didn't call you a crackhead. Your crack dealer called my phone. I don't know why you gave them my number. Like, your crack dealer called my phone. I don't know. Like, I didn't call you a crackhead. It's time to go to an award show.
Okay. I got an award. I got a funny award.
I didn't have my Give me 1,115 predictions, because we're on a break, but now it's time to give our awards to noteworthy moments you might have missed. Abraham, what is your award this week?
It's funny that this is the award I give out this week. The award I give out this week is the hard-headed award, because this character in the show is hard-headed, much like some people in my life. So the person who wins this award is actually going to be Tonta.
Oh. Yeah, you know, I'm really glad that you gave an award to Tonta, because he really is one of my favorite extras. Well,
but do you know why he gets the hard-headed award?
Why is that?
It's for two reasons. One, this man fell off back in the day, back in Long Ring Longland. He fell off his steps, like whatever, 100 feet, however high he was in the air, knocked his head, and he was fine. That dude did not die from. So you had to have a hard head to be able to survive that fall.
A literal hard head.
A literal hard head. But not only that, this man in this chapter is back again on these stilts after he played himself for like 50 years.
Right.
He just
yeah,
went back because he's hard headed.
He got afraid to get off is the reason. That,
yeah.
To get off is the reason he was on stilts.
Exactly.
It's just such a beautiful, like, honestly, it's such a beautiful moment as someone who's been reading One Piece for a long time to have this character that I honestly absolutely love, who also, sidebar, like, his whole story, it does seem suddenly very relevant with the whole rising sea levels. We could honestly get into a whole separate series of conversations about how to interpret that, which is also very close to, like, Knock Upstream, etc., but I don't want to do all that right now. Having this dude who has these really hilarious moments with his horse, like running along the plains, yeah. Sherry, with, you know, offering everyone the milk, but the milk is actually like now rotted cheese because he's been
you want
on,
cheese?
Yeah, because he's been on stilts for it. No, he asked if they want a milk. Oh no, I think he said he offered him milk and then he was like, oh, it's not there. And then he's like, oh, actually, all I have is cheese. And
yeah,
I'll give Usopp this for all the crap I give him. He was hilarious in that arc too, being like, that's the rotted milk. We're not eating that. Luffy, don't eat it. And then Luffy gets it. They get food poisoning. You know, as someone's been reading this chapter a long time, you think about it. Like, kids who are reading One Piece now, like, they just think he's a random dude around the world. And it doesn't matter that he's on stilts. It doesn't matter. There's a horse in the background. And there's something like really fun and special to me about having this Easter egg of having like known this character for, you know, I don't know, probably like around 20 years and seeing him after all this time be like, this dude is still out here, his long-headed horse. And he found his people. Because you see, there's a couple other people there. He's fine. It looks like he's caught up to someone, you know, whether through the time skip or whatever. So, Hardhead Award to Tanta. That one's absolutely beautiful. The award I'm going to give this week, I originally called it something else, but I think I'm going to change the name right now. I'm going to call it the Not Thinking About It Award. Because whenever something terrible happens, like, you know, and there's something that could cause a lot of stress and like I have no control over it, I do this, I play the not thinking about it game. I say 1, 2, 3, not thinking about it, go. And suddenly my life is better. I do actually, I actually literally
That's
do
crazy.
That.
Okay. Okay.
I actually do that. And suddenly my life is better because whatever this thing that I have no control over is not causing me stress.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who's doing that right now? Jaguar D. Saul.
Saul,
like, this dude got frozen by Aokiji. He had a whole terrible thing in Ohara. He got washed up after betraying the Marines, ended up in the absolute wrong place in a Buster Call, got frozen, left for dead. And this dude is now just, you got this big old broadcast happening, and homie, it has his leap. I don't think he had a cigar, but he might have had a little, you know, a little straw in his mouth. He's got a sunny day. He's got his legs kicked back. Saul's got a good life. Not thinking about it. Award goes to Jaguar D. Saul.
There you go. I like it. I love it.
Well, you know,
I think it's at the very least
I gave an S class award, right? Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
No. I just wanted to say I think it's that time for Alex to jump on in here and start running off some theories for us to evaluate.
Man, you gotta do the read, Abraham. You gotta do the read.
Oh, my bad. Let me do the read. I didn't realize that there was a read. That's my bad.
It's okay.
Let me read this. okay. Now it's time for S class or F class, the segment where we find theories on the internet and rate them so you don't have to.
Let's go.
Alex, why don't you get us the first theory?
Sure thing. So this first theory is from Mr. Morge. So you know it came from Abraham.
Oh, Mr. Morge. A Morge theory. Yes.
Okay. No Uteron this week, but let's jump into it. So Morge says that the Egghead Island incident will involve Punk Records disseminating information about the world government to reveal the dystopia they've created. So the world government has spent centuries spreading propaganda and crafting an image of themselves as heroes of the world. Before the world government can be overthrown, it's critical that this image is broken and the dystopia they've created is revealed. Back in Marineford, nobody in the world was rooting for the Whitebeard pirates, in large part because this image was never broken. Additionally, a key moment in the Dressrosa arc, which in many ways is a microcosm of the story as a whole, is the defeat of Sugar in order to reveal the dystopic world that Doflamingo had created for everyone on the island. It was only after this occurred that the Straw Hats defeated Doffy and helped reestablish a just ruler. As a result, Morge speculates that the Egghead Island incident will involve Punk Records broadcasting a lot of info about the world government to the rest of the world in order to pull the curtain back and reveal the true face of the world government. Jordan, I want to hear your thoughts on this. We've already talked about this quite a bit on this pod, but I think one key point here is that Morge put this video up about a year ago. So we're now seeing the fruits of his speculation.
I'm glad you said that, Alex, because that is the only redeeming thing about Abraham bringing this theory to S class and F class. What is this? Like, it's just not courageous at any point in any way at this point. Like, theorizing that, to be fair, at the beginning of this arc, that the Egghead, that is an S class theory at that point, that prediction. Because at that point, we had no idea that we were going to end up with this large reveal for Vegapunk, etc. That's why I said the fact that this came out 1 year ago is the redeeming thing. And at that point, I also liked this theory, and I also suggested that the Egghead Island incident was going to have to be something bigger than just the Celestial Dragons being defeated.
You know, I'm going to cut you off
within the lines of what I'm saying.
I got to cut you off there. this guy would do. He do this shit all the time. We are like, a trash out. No. You do something like this idea is trash. And then you're just like, I don't know what's gonna happen, but all I know is that idea is trash.
This idea wasn't trash.
The idea of the Egghead Island incident being the death of Agorase, you were like, that's dumb. That's not gonna be the Egghead Island incident. And then you're like, oh, because I said that wasn't gonna be the incident, I get to claim everything that's not Agorase dying being the incident. And I'm just like, fuck out of here.
Like, I just was claiming that was an insane thing to think something that small and that small was going to become known as the Egghead Island incident. Yeah. That's all I'm saying. You know, I didn't have an idea for exactly what it was going to be. I liked this theory at that point. I think I actually did watch that video. You know, at this point, I don't think this is a particularly interesting theory at this moment in time. I think at this, you know, when this came out over a year ago, that's a solid prediction. You know, I think the jury's still out over whether or not Vegapunk's going to really directly talk about the world government and them being evil. I do think that the thing that he reveals is going to, at the very least, reveal that the world government, like, allow people to make the connection that the world government has been doing something, and for them to make the come to the decision themselves. Most likely, the decision that whatever the world government's doing is bad. So I don't know, like just in terms of like moment right now of courage, this is an F class theory because it's just like, oh, this is a relative. A relatively.
But he didn't make it this just now. He made it a year ago.
No, it's true, Abraham, but we're rating this theories today. If we rated this theory a year ago, it would have been an S-class theory. Rating it right now, the point of this segment is not to come on and say, oh, this person made an S-class theory. You know, if someone predicted something that happened 3 years ago and then we come on after it's happened, then we're not rating that for S-class theory. We're talking about in this moment right now. If you just say these things, it's an S-class theory to me. No, it's not an S-class theory because it seems way too poised to happen to actually be something that has required a certain amount of courage and thought to actually put up at this moment today in 2024.
This is your Morge hate just coming through, because we talked about a theory earlier today where we both were like, shout out to Joy Boy for predicting years ago that, you know, the ancient kingdom was like a kingdom of pirates, right? Like,
you should have brought that up in S class, F class. I would have said that's an F class theory at this point.
Why? Because
I just explained to you. No,
listen, it doesn't matter. It does, according to your criteria, it doesn't matter that he made it years ago, because now, we know that the ancient kingdom were pirates. So what is it like?
To be fair, we actually don't know that yet, but go on. Sure, we know Joy Boy was the first pirate, but go on.
Sure. Yeah. But the point is, like, you Mark, for another, like Marco the Phoenix came out with a theory, and he predicted with all this information that like Conjurer was the traitor, right? If after the fact I look back on that theory and I'm like, oh, this is an F class theory because I know Conjurer is the traitor now. If I like brought this to you, no, that's still an S class theory because of how he was able to construct that argument with the information that he had at the time and make that point. And I'm
it's true, but yeah, thank you for bringing up Conjurer being the traitor, because that's actually that's a great example. If 3 months after Conjurer was revealed as the traitor, you came on a show and said he's been revealed as a traitor, here's a theory about that Conjurer was the traitor, I would say that's an F-class theory at this point, because we're not reviewing a YouTube video based on when it came out. We're coming in here today what is an S-class or F-class theory? Well, we're going to talk about that in the post-show. Alex,
go ahead.
Yeah.
What's next?
Yeah. Jordan, I've got a little mini theory to throw in here, and that is that Abraham is just a huge Mr. Morge stan, and that's what this is all about right now. Is that S or
F? I think that's an S-class theory. He just wants me to say Morge got it right. Thank you.
All right,
he's the GOAT. I don't know what to tell you, man. He's the GOAT.
Our next one, Jordan, you picked up from a short from Anniverse, and it revolves around Joy Boy's betrayal. So the theory goes that the original Joy Boy's death was due to betrayal within his own crew. The giant robot, Zunesha, and other characters we've seen apologizing to Joy Boy were apologizing because someone betrayed him. And that person, who was part of his crew, was Emu. Abraham, we did see some betrayal earlier in Marineford when Squard turns on Whitebeard. Do you think something similar happened to what we now know was the first pirate crew?
Man, I love the idea that there was some kind of betrayal. Emu being the person that did it could be like, because that's giving like Blackbeard vibes almost, right? And I think it's a cool idea. I'll give it S-class, just because if it was like if that was revealed in the story, I would be into it. I would want to know what happened. Like I would be thirsting for more knowledge about that. I don't think that that feels like the niche that Blackbeard is kind of filled already, right? Like, you know, he's on Whitebeard's crew, he betrayed his brothers, and now blah 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 blah. So I don't think that's actually the case, but I think this is a very interesting theory. So I'll call it an S-class theory.
Yeah, this theory goes especially hard. And I originally had read this theory well before we knew that Joy Boy was the first pirate. And so I think I meant to maybe bring it last week, but especially now, given this more information that actually Joy Boy was someone who had a pirate crew and was the first person, I really like the idea of, you know, there's going to have to be some kind of connection between him and Joy Boy. There's going to have to be some kind of connection between, you know, whoever, like wherever Blackbeard's fruit came from and Joy Boy, probably the darkness fruit, probably anyway. And so I really like that this gives us an interesting structure for like the history of what's happened between Joy Boy and M in a way that gives us like placed within the context of the ancient kingdom and the characters that had and the people that were like living then, and see that will having continued over years and years and years. To me, it's really exciting. I'd be really interested to hear more. It would add a level of complexity to him at the very least for me, and a level of backstory besides them just being evil, and a level of personal connection between Luffy, whoever the D's are, and him. So I'm really into this theory, S-class theory. Alex, what's next?
Yeah, the last one I've got for you is from Joy Boy Theories. So I'm glad you've been propping him up on calling out Joy Boy as the original pirate. And the gist of this one is that the Sky Islands we see today are actually a second layer of clouds. Prior to the Void Century, the initial cloud layer that now forms the foundation of the One Piece world covered the original world. The ancient kingdom attempted to survive this with the creation of trees like Sunlight Eve to deliver light and oxygen from the upper atmosphere. But ultimately, the world below, perhaps where Laughtail resides, had to be abandoned. Nika, the sun god, may have helped the people escape the world of darkness to the ocean world above. And then during the Void Century, some of the original six moons that we see documented in O'Hara may have been destroyed to form the islands that we see today. Jordan, you were talking earlier about how we don't have an explanation for the hole beneath Enies Lobby yet. Could this theory potentially explain the origins of that hole and what could be underneath Enies Lobby?
It's difficult for me to exactly understand how this would explain the hole in Enies Lobby, especially given what we've seen with the giant world, you know, island eating, you know, eye in the sky that the world government has. That feels, to the very least, feel like a much stronger possibility for that. But what I do really love about this theory is we started with, like, we've only seen one moon in the sky, and we've seen a series of moons throughout the whole, like in Clover's office. And understanding that, like, surely at some point that's like a relevant piece of the story, where like there's a series of satellites flying around whatever we have. And so I really like this idea as far as like explaining where islands come from, explaining perhaps that we're not necessarily just in a world that's just been sinking, but also having had things fall from the sky. And I think it's at the very least a really interesting, another really interesting explanation for the nature of the world. So I got to give it an S-class theory.
So I feel like I may have like missed the step, but is the idea that people originally like resided on the ocean floor, and that like the destruction of the moon created a bunch of continents for people to live on the surface of the water or something like that?
Yeah, so basically you have the world and you have continents, yeah. And maybe it's Earth-like. We don't know what the original world could be. But then, you know, the Skypiea clouds formed an entire layer on top of that world, plunging it into darkness, making it unlivable.
Okay.
Then you've got this ocean forming on that layer of clouds above the world. And then Nika Joy Boy goes and explores that world, brings everybody up to then survive on that world. They destroy the moons to create livable areas, and that is the world that we now know as the One Piece.
Yeah, for me, it just feels too sci-fi for One Piece, and I understand One Piece has components of sci-fi with like the Germa and whatnot, but. Yeah, I don't love this theory because it feels like we're jumping through so many hoops to try and, like, I don't know, fit everything into, like, try and fit everything into place into the world as how we know it exists right now, right? Like, I personally don't think those six moons that we see in the Library of O'Hara ever actually existed in the real world. I think that Oda occasionally, he loves world building so much that maybe he takes creative liberties in his series where he's just like, I'm going to draw a solar system with six moons because I think that looks cool. Even if there aren't actually like six moons in the real One Piece universe, you know? So for me, I think the more likely explanation is that scene in O'Hara was probably just a creative liberty. And I think it just feels too sci-fi for me. And so I don't love this theory. I probably would give it an F class.
That's crazy, man. Joy Boy is the GOAT. I thought it was a beautiful theory.
I like Joy Boy. I was the first person to shout him out today. But like,
you were, yeah. I think this one's complicated, and that makes it kind of tough to figure out. Like, there's aspects of it that I find more difficult to get behind, and aspects of it that I find really interesting. But overall, when it has enough courage and enough things that make me think that's kind of reasonable and could explain something, do I think it's true? Probably not. But as a theory, it's definitely S-class fun to listen to, for me anyway.
Yeah, I'll also say it's worth a watch. He goes into a lot more detail about how the devil fruits may have been formed. So if you have a minute,
okay. I'll give it a watch.
CC, I'm very intrigued. So that's it for S-Class and F-Class theories. Now it's time for One Piece Would You Rather, our new segment where we answer hypotheticals as if we're in the One Piece world. Alex, what do you have for us today?
Yeah, so last week we did an FMK on the big three, Luffy, Zoro, and Sanji. I think it'd be fun to do another FMK this week on some of the Straw Hat women. We debated, you know, which three we would narrow in on. But I think Nami, Robin, and Vivi, who is technically a Straw Hat, is an interesting set.
Jordan, you want to go first?
But it's easy. I'm marrying Robin.
Is it? Okay.
First of all. Okay. You know I like the older women, first of all. So that's we're already starting off on a good thing there. Robin is the baddest. She's incredibly smart. Thoughtful, kind of has like a backstory, but like, you know, has worked through it and is like a really just like kind, whatever person. And just Robin. I love bangs, you know, at pre-time skip, right? Give me the bangs, like just beautiful. Love Robin. You know, and we're talking about a one-nighter, it's got to be Nami. You know what I'm saying? Like, we're talking about a one-nighter, it's got to be Nami. Like,
you're going to off Vivi?
Here's the thing. You know, you remember Long Ring, Long Land, right? One thing we have seen is through the whole series is Nami has a temper, and she can maybe get a little physical with our characters, all right? Now, I don't know how much we talk about these things, but, you know, I don't mind that one bit. I don't mind that.
In the bedroom?
That's, I don't mind that one bit. You know, that like little some, you know, I might be turned this way, might get slapped the other way. You know, I don't have one issue with that. And I feel like Nami will fulfill certain things for me that Vivi, in terms of a one-nighter, yes, she's a princess, whatever, but I'm already marrying Robin. This is an easy answer, man. Marry Robin, a one-nighter with Nami. Yeah. And it's just as a matter of sadness, Vivi just has to die.
Yeah. No, I agree with, I think Robin is, so Robin is the most interesting of all of them, right? So you got to marry Robin. I need someone that'll, you know, keep me interested. I don't want to get bored with whoever I'm with. And I feel like, you know, Vivi, she's really, really nice and selfless, but like that's really not much of a personality. Like Nami would get on my toes and just, you know,
that's what you like? She would get on your toes? I didn't know we were getting like that. What?
Why do you always take things to the weirdest places?
I've been listening to too much Nightcap, man. I've been listening to too much Nightcap.
So I'm not married. I'm definitely not marrying. It has to be Robin that I would marry, just because she's the most interesting of the bunch.
Right. Vivi is a princess. You could be a sugar baby.
Yeah, but that's not interest.
Sugar baby is, you know. Yeah, but you could be a sugar baby. You will get to be a prince.
I didn't think about that.
I thought about that and I still chose Robin, but I just want you to think about that, because that should be at least included in the calculus.
It should be. But I gotta live in a desert, bro. See, I gotta live in a desert if I marry this girl too. I don't want to live in a desert.
You live in a castle in a desert.
Yeah, but you know. You know, these people tried to kill the whole family, like, not that long ago.
Bro, did you see how much food they had? What you mean they tried to kill the whole family? Like, what, Robin's family? They already killed Robin's whole family.
Yeah, it's true.
They killed
him. I know.
like, Nami only got family. Like, what are you talking about?
No, I think I got to marry Robin. I agree with Mary and Robin, but I'm definitely smashing Vivi. I'm not banging Nami. It's definitely Vivi's choice for sure. I think Vivi is the most beautiful woman in this series. I thought, man, that blue hair, maybe it's just because it's so exotic, but like that blue hair and like eyes, like she's just a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful woman. She's definitely my one night stand.
Choosing Vivi over Nami, this dude definitely doing missionary every day. That's all I'm saying.
What? No. Nami is definitely the vanilla choice. Nami is the vanilla choice, because that is like, when I say vanilla choice, I'm not talking about who she might be in the bedroom. I'm talking about like people's tastes. Like that's not the courageous pick. That's just like Nami's been in the story from the day
well,
born.
I think I actually gave you some pretty courageous answers as to exactly the specific set of skills that I think Nami could provide that are in line with my tastes.
I'm saying the kind of people that would choose Nami, maybe not you, but in general, the kind of people that would be like Nami for waifu over like someone like Robin or Vivi or whatever. Those are just vanilla people. Vivi is clearly the more exotic pick. So I'm smashing Vivi. And then also, you know, Nami's a selfish person. She has her moments and I love her. She's a straw hat.
That's the whole point of this type of that. It's a one nighter, bro. That doesn't matter. Who
would I rather kill between Nami and Vivi? I'd rather kill Nami than Vivi. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, fair enough, but Vivi not gonna hit me in the face. So that's what we got for the One Piece chat today. You know, it's time to talk some about the culture. Abraham, have you heard of Stellar Blade recently?
Not until like a day ago, but I don't really know what it is. Is it a video game or something like that?
Yeah, man. So I'm going to read from an article on Den of Geek. Unless this is your first day on the internet, you're probably not going to be surprised to hear that gamers are leaving enthusiastic comments about a highly sexualized female character. For that matter, this is hardly the first time that such a game has featured a stylized and sexualized female as a playable protagonist. But some find the design of Eve, the main character, and the team's attitude, as well as the attitude of some Stellar Blade fans, towards her design to be problematic or simply creepy. Some are simply uncomfortable with the general approach to character design, while others argue that this fan service style feels regressive at a time when female character designs in games are regularly criticized by some gamers for apparently not being sexy enough. It should be noted that Stellar Blade received a mature ESRB rating for, among other things, quote, blood splatter reflects, unquote, quote, revealing costumes, unquote, and quote, breasts that jiggle during combat, unquote.
No. That's a quote
from the reveal.
Breasts, I got a question. If you design a character with big breasts, but they don't jiggle during combat, like, you know, you just like... Stannis in like her bodysuit or something like that.
Right,
you know,
right,
like,
right.
Is that mature? is it the jiggle or is it the big breasts?
Abraham, you know, I would recommend you look up some clips on YouTube, but I'm not actually going to do that. I'm going to get to what this did to my algorithm later. It's not just like breasts that jiggle during combat. It's like basically in any outfit that she's in. Like, you remember that One Piece cover spread where you had the four women and just like these ridiculous and aggressive upskirts?
Yeah.
It's like anything she's doing, you just see her like she's diving forward. It's going to give you a slow-mo when it's just like basically a crotch shot, right? If she's like sliding on the ground, it's going to come around and give you the angle where it's basically just a crotch shot. And some of these outfits and like the way her boobs are just like exposed everywhere is like, it's insane. It's like, it's crazier than anything I've seen in like any other video game.
Okay.
It's like, well, a level beyond Samus.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So I guess, you know, to tell you about the wasn't in my YouTube algorithm, you know, I started seeing these random videos come up because a buddy told me about the game and I looked it up and you know, I got a recommendation that's just like, why Celebrate Blade should win Game of the Year. And so I click on it. Okay. You know, it's like a minute video. And it's basically just like a 1 minute segment of an action scene with like four upskirts and like God, you know, her just like bent over crazy. And as time has gone on, I was messaging our friend Joaquin about this, and every time it just gets worse. My YouTube algorithm took it worse and worse. The other day I got one that is just, so you know how a lot of these Japanese RPGs have fishing mini games, right?
Like, okay, sure.
Yeah, you like go fishing, right?
Fishing and Pokemon kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly, right? That kind of thing. Yeah. I got a YouTube video that was just from the angle, like her in basically like a you know, a bikini at most, basically from the angle of directly between her legs with this, the fishing pole.
You got a POV.
Yeah, yeah, I got a POV with the with the fishing pole right up against it. I'm texting my boy Shane, who told me about this game. Every time I get another one of these, I'm like, okay, it's reached the max, right? And that one was a Japanese. It says, "Sore wa stellar blade." Like, this is Stellar Blade, you know? Yesterday, I got a video recommended to me on YouTube. It said, "Top 10 Japanese adult video actresses and porn stars."
Your algorithm is total.
Bro, it's total. Bro,
you can't. You know what the crazy thing is? You're gonna have someone at your house one day. Like, you might bring a girl over. Bro, she might be like, "I want to watch something." You can't even open YouTube up around people because something like that pops.
It was absolutely wild. Like, by the time I had the POV, right, I was texting my boy saying, "Bro, my YouTuber, this is ruining my YouTube recommendations. It's starting to look like The Hub." And he's like, "Yeah, it's kind of like when you get, like, you watch one right-wing video and you start getting it." And I'm like, "Yeah, but the problem is, like, I don't hate looking at this as much as I hate looking at right-wing stuff. So I look at it just that much longer." I said, "Mom, is you looking like The Hub?" And then it actually made a porn recommendation for me. The craziest.
On YouTube? Well,
the top porn star actress is that one. Like, oh, I'm just saying that that's already getting me to, like, it was already at, like, starting to look like The Hub. And then when you actually start recommending me adult video actresses, that was next level, bro.
That's crazy. Also, man, these, like, you actually watched the video, so, like, maybe this isn't as crazy, but the way that these phones, like, listen in on these on conversations that you have or people that you're around, and just how your information is shared is crazy. I'll tell you, I mean, two examples. One time, I went to go hoop at the undergrad campus at Wash U, where I go to school, right?
We know you're an MD PhD student at Wash U.
No. Like, people might not know Wash U. You know, it's in the middle of St. Louis. Who goes to St. Louis? You know, so I go to the basketball gym to go hoop, and the guy who I rent the ball from, like, that's working there, he's clearly like a East African dude. He's like Ethiopian, right? Yeah. And I can recognize that, brother. He recognizes that I'm also East African. And so, you know, we talk for like a minute or two, you know, he tells me, like, he's like, "You know, my name is, like, Michael, blah, 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 blah," whatever. The next day, Facebook friend recommended is this dude.
And bro, I'm just crazy. Like, yeah,
I'm like, bro, I have no mutual friends with this guy. I was just,
that's
like,
crazy.
You know,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and
that's,
I'm like,
crazy.
It was ridiculous. But then the other story I want to tell you is that I was hanging out with a couple friends maybe like 2 years ago. And one of my friends, she was telling me how she wanted to buy these. She was telling us, not just me, the whole group, like, how she wanted these. There's these underwear that women can wear when they're menstruating, apparently. It's like washable underwear. It's like, I don't know. It's some kind of menstruation underwear.
Right.
And she was like, "Yeah, you know, this is what I want this, blah, 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 blah." I can't remember exactly what the nature of the conversation was, like why she was bringing it up. But I had never heard of this. I was just like, "You want what? Like, what is this exactly?"
Right.
And then she was explaining it to me. And then the next 2-3 weeks, I just, all of the ads that would play before my YouTube videos were ads about this kind of underwear. And I'm just like, I texted her. I was like, "You ruined it." You know, like, I keep getting these ads for this shit. I'm like, I'm not even a woman. How are you advertising?
Right. These algorithms are just going like totally bonkers, man. It's totally crazy. Like, the algorithms, and the lack of privacy on these things is unreal. So YouTube, Facebook, please take note. We would like you to stop doing this. I would like my YouTube homepage to be something I can show my mother. And Abraham does not want things for menstruate. It doesn't want like underwear you can wash because you can menstruate in them.
I don't menstruate. I'm sorry. I just don't.
He does not menstruate. And so on that note, that's what we have for time. Thanks to Alex, your friend who produced this podcast, for helping out behind the scenes. Come back next Sunday to hear what we've got to say about the upcoming chapter 1115, Willow's Predictions. In the meantime, we are your friends who read One Piece. Help us get more friends by liking our podcast on Spotify, sharing, giving us 5 stars, and following us on YouTube at Friends Who Read One Piece to see Abraham's ugly mug on all the thumbnails. Unfortunately, mine was on one. As Abraham pointed out, it did not do as well as the other videos. I like to think that that has nothing to do with how I look, but if you ask my dad, he might disagree. Thanks for listening. Later.
Take it easy, guys.